We've all heard the hype. They're green, they're quiet, and they save us a ton of cash. But is this really the full scoop on electric vehicles? Are they the holy grail or just another polished piece of junk metal? I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're gonna dig deep into the controversy of electric vehicles. Why do some say that they're more trouble than they're worth? And are there any dirty little secrets about those lithium-ion batteries? You're not gonna wanna miss this. It's gonna be electric. Let's get into it. Today we have the good, the bad, and the downright ugly side of electric vehicles. And to discuss today, we have our guest host, Malik Abdul, radio host and political strategist.
Well, happy to join you for sure. You know, on a special day, I get to actually sit beside you. So thank you so much for having me, and I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Absolutely, we're really excited. So first up, we're gonna have the good. And there is a lot of good to be said about EVs. They're eco-friendly, and with gas at literally $6 a gallon, they're really wallet-friendly as well. But is there anything else good about EVs aside from that?
Well, it's on the radio show, and we were talking about, and have a lot of people come on. I think the initial claim that EVs, that many people are making, that for one, especially the administration, whether it's under the Joe Biden administration or whether it's in California or otherwise, there is this assumption that everyone loves this. Well, not exactly. And it depends on exactly where you are. I think that there is a benefit. You know, we've moved beyond just the hybrid vehicles. We're now into EV territory. And I think we're seeing now with the difficulty, even with the infrastructure, that whether it's here in Washington, D.C., because we had an issue trying to get those EV stations actually even built, but the cost of even building those, I was not aware of the cost of actually building even single EV station, is the cost of just astronomical, and I don't think that people are factoring that into their support for EVs. Although I do support EV vehicles, for sure, but the cost factor is a big issue nowadays.
Absolutely, and that really is the bad. People aren't thinking about those costs. And for me, I live in California, and we all know that EVs pretty much dominate the California market there. But the bad thing is that they literally just put up a supercharger a couple blocks away from where I live, and ever since that supercharger went into effect in March, we've just had rolling blackouts all summer long. And it's basically like living in Africa. So it's crazy. We've never had that before.
What is it? So is it that in, you know, my EV experience is not as great as yours, but what is the issue that it just pulls so much energy from the grid? Like, how is it, like, you're having rolling blackouts? Because I'm assuming it wasn't the case before they installed the station or facility or what have you. Is it that it pulls so much off the energy grid? Is that why we're having
it? It pulls so much off the energy grid, and the grid basically wasn't designed to put that much energy out in the first place. So we didn't have the capacity. Like you said, that's an infrastructure problem. Mm-hmm. And that's a long-term problem that we're gonna have to solve if we want to push this EV adoption narrative. And that's really going to be a big challenge, because right now we're dealing with blackouts all summer and probably in the winter if people start using a heating bill. Like if it's going to be a cold winter and everybody starts using heating and all of that, we're going to have the exact same problem. This summer it got so bad that the governor of California, they actually encouraged people to not charge their electric vehicles overnight. And it's like, how does that make sense? You want people to use an electric vehicle, but now they can't get to work?
Yeah, and that is the thing. That is, you know, and I'm all for new technology, I believe. I don't think we should be living in the dark ages when it comes to technology, but we have to be at a point where we're willing to have the type of conversations to understand that maybe we're not there just yet. And it's one thing to have this ideal within 10 years, this is what we're expecting to happen. You know, you may have non-driving cars on the road, you know, X number of non-driving cars on the road within a 10-year span or what have you, but you have to have the mechanisms in place, you have to have the infrastructure in place to support that, and we're seeing that's not the case. If you're somewhere in, for instance, Montana, Well, how does that work in Montana? Because it gets very cold in Montana. I believe it was just recently snowing just last month in Montana. How does that work if we're going to have this large EV footprint? If I'm assuming, as you said, it don't necessarily perform well in colder weathers. How does that work in areas that naturally don't have just the natural infrastructure to support it? This is aside from a place like a California or other places like that who may build these type of, you know, systems, but for those who don't have it, what does it mean for them and the EV market, which is why they don't do well in places that aren't like a California or Florida or other places like that?
Exactly, and the big question is, who's actually going to go out and build all these infrastructures? Because right now, like we were talking about, it's literally just mainly Tesla who's building out the charging stations and the supercharging stations. There's very few other companies going out and doing this.
Do you see, well, let me ask you then, because on that point right there, the fact that it's really just Tesla monopolizing this, how does it work with getting other companies even interested? Because I'm imagining it's a cost issue for those companies as well. Easier maybe for Tesla, because Tesla has, you know, whether it's trying to do the non-driving cars or even of the hybrid vehicles, it was one of the first ones to actually roll out that type of system as far as a car is concerned. But then how do other companies get into that market if they don't have the same sort of, I guess, historical background as far as those EV vehicles or this even technology? Like, how do other cars get on board? And I guess that's the question.
Exactly. And that's going to be the big question. And a lot of the, even though they say a lot of their technology is open source, they're saying that a lot of the superchargers, they're not going to be fully compatible with the other vehicles, the other EVs that are coming out, because it's going to be a different charge. So apparently their battery, it's bad to use a supercharger on other brands because their batteries are not just compatible with the way the superchargers work, and that's going to decrease the lifespan of other brands' batteries.
Yeah, and that point, because I was reading, I think it is that the batteries, they're much heavier than your standard automatic vehicles, that they're much heavier, and that the cost of even replacing the battery, I think that the cost of even replacing the battery is very expensive. Now, I would love to be in a day where we could, you know, I would feel comfortable driving an EV vehicle from one spot to the other. But I don't know if we're there yet, and I wouldn't necessarily trust an EV if I'm going to take a road trip using an EV, because I may not have a charging station between here, and if I'm going to Florida, between here and Florida, I may not have access to the charging stations. Yeah.
Yeah, but then aside from the infrastructure problems, I do think there is some good to EVs, and a lot of people are buying EVs because it seems to be a lot cheaper than your traditional vehicles, and it's much easier to fill up at a gas station. So right now we're paying over $100 to fill up regular petrol diesel at a gas station, and that doesn't even last the whole week for me.
Right.
And the other thing is that the torque is actually pretty neat on EVs, because that's a
EV?
Really exciting thing.
Really?
If you don't have a launch on a regular car, there's no such thing as a launch. So for people who've never experienced an EV or driving in an EV, the torque is actually a really neat thing. The launch pad is a really, really cool feature, and it's like an exciting little thing to get people like on board. So it's a very neat experience, but aside from those like neat experiences and the fact that it's cheaper, I don't know what else is good about EVs or what is driving this EV adoption.
Well, on the cost, even on the cost issue, I wasn't aware that until I was doing the research planning for the show, that in some instances it actually is cheaper to get an EV vehicle than your standard vehicle. That is a benefit to that. But if you find someone, for instance, who, you know, may have a job, they may live in a, you know, and a lot of people in this area, they commute in, you know, from whether it's West Virginia, there are people I know who I worked with, and when I was in government, they drove all the way from West Virginia. It may not be necessarily practical for you. So I do think, as much as people express all of the challenges with EVs, I still think that we should be supportive of that type of technology, because at the end of the day, the technology is not changing. We can do things to benefit, to basically work around the edges to make sure that it works for a larger group of people. But I don't think, you know, even though I hear people now, oh, an EV, you know, it's just gonna follow. No, I don't think we should even encourage this notion that somehow, you know, it should be the end of EV vehicles. I think that type of stuff is important, but I just just think that there needs to be additional, some more research and some more honesty on whether or not we're ready for it at this point. And we shouldn't have governments, which is what we're seeing, mm-hmm. even state governments mm-hmm. pushing EV vehicles when we're not just there yet. I think we need to have more honest assessments about where we are, not just on the infrastructure side. We need to have more assessment of where we are. And from what I'm seeing, we're not there yet. Maybe 10 years from now.
Absolutely.
But not yet.
And those need to be honest assessments, because right now the entire industry is being subsidized. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen to the industry when suddenly you pull the subsidies away and they have to subsist naturally on their own?
Yeah, that's a very fair point, because if you don't, those subsidies usually are provided by the government. And when you don't have those subsidies, we've seen similar things, whether it's in the solar industry where, you know, there was a lot of rebate options that if you needed, you know, solar panels, and those things are good as well. Solar energy is great. But a lot of times what we see is that governments begin to push, you know, private corporations, and then that kind of funnels down to the consumer. But all of these things need to be considered as we talk about our role in the future or what the future looks like. So I think that there are, as you said, there are some good elements for sure with EV vehicles. But I think I would probably go with the hybrid vehicle first before I would just go with the full-on EV vehicle. I'm not there yet, just in my head, but maybe I need to go to California to drive an EV vehicle, and my mind may indeed change.
All right, fair points. Thank you so much, Malik, but stick around with us. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by our expert guest, Lauren Fix, the car coach, to discuss the future of electric vehicles. Stick around, because you're not going to want to miss this. Welcome back. EVs look like they're here to stay, but how do countries and communities plan to implement the infrastructure that will allow for majority ownership of electric vehicles if that is the stated goal? So for this, we're joined by Lauren Fix, the car coach. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Well, thank you for having me. Yeah, there's a lot of questions I'd like to answer about electric vehicles, and I think it's very easy to listen to the mainstream media and people think, oh, this is great, everybody's buying electric vehicles. But there's a lot more to that. And the truth is, the numbers are far from what you think.
Absolutely. But first, let's just talk a little bit about EV manufacturers who have been caught tweaking their mileage gauges to make their cars seem mm-hmm. like they're going further on a single charge than they actually are. And at the center of this is none other than Elon Musk. As a research firm yeah. had found that Tesla developed software so that their cars show a false range when the battery of their cars is above 50% charge. But under 50%, that data becomes more real. So to the user, it looks like once you drop to 50%, it empties out a lot faster. So give us a scoop there.
Yeah. Well, could you imagine that with a gas tank? You go and fill it up and you're driving along and, oh, I've got a half tank. And then suddenly, oh, you don't have a half tank. You have a quarter tank. I think there's a panic involved. I think that would be true with any electric or gasoline-powered vehicle. With gasoline-powered vehicles, it's based on what fuel is left in the tank. With electricity, it's based on a lot of other factors. You're talking about distance. You've got the climate. Do you have the heat on? Do you have the radio on? Are you charging your phone? Anytime you're using any of those additional accessories, it's going to put more of a draw. Of course, temperature also is a huge factor. If it's really warm outside or if it's really cold outside, both extremes reduce the battery's life by about a third. And that's important to note whether you're living in Montana, like you were talking about, or whether you're, you know, living in Arizona. And these are factors I think that, again, aren't considered. Manufacturers put their numbers together, they're approved by the EPA, and they're absolutely inaccurate. And now the EPA is turning on these manufacturers saying, oh, you said we would get 400 miles out of this car, and we're getting 275. And it's really off by almost 15%. And this is from a study from the Society of Automotive Engineers, the SAE, which I happen to be a member of. And this is really important, because if you did that with a car and you said, oh, your car gets 52 miles to the gallon and you're getting 30, you'd be pretty upset. So you have to keep that in mind. This has to be addressed. And they use these numbers called MPGE. So when you look at the window sticker, you go, oh, wow, 95 MPG or 101. It's not really a fair value for you to assess it by. It should be based on mileage driven, and then all those other factors. Where do you live? Where are you going? Are you idling, waiting? Are you running accessories? All that's going to be a huge factor. So it's very difficult to get the true numbers on range.
Absolutely. When I was looking at it, they even told me that if I roll the windows down, because then it creates a drag, I get less mileage. And yes. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, if I roll the windows down, I'm not even using any electrical components. And it's such a simple little thing, yeah. But it's crazy. No wonder range anxiety exists, because it's a real thing. And basically, Musk created all this range anxiety in people, because then you actually can't rely on the number, the sticker that you see at the dealership, or even your own dashboard, because you never know if you're going to make it to your destination if your battery is under 50%. So now, what is the true range of EVs these days with the technology now?
Well, the top range is by Lucid. It's just under 500 miles. I've reviewed and tested all those cars. I will tell you that it's far now from range anxiety. It's become charging anxiety. Now, you said you lived in California. I live in New York. And you can go places and there are no fast chargers. And you don't know when you get there if somebody's charged there or that charging station doesn't work, whether it be Tesla or any other brand. And there are a lot of other brands. You've got Charge America, which is partly owned by Volkswagen. That was part of that Dieselgate thing, which I find amusing. So the penalty for Dieselgate was to invest in an electric charging company in which they make money. So again, there's a lot of, there's a Blink, there's a bunch of other companies out there. But as far as fast chargers, Tesla's fast chargers can work on other vehicles, by the way, but you don't get the fast charge, you get level two charging. So there's really, it's the same as any other charger. Fast chargers are out there and many of them don't work. So people have gotten into this charging anxiety. I get there, I'm in a rush, I can't, somebody's in the charging station. And Jennifer Granholm, who's in charge of the Department of Transportation and Energy here in the U.S., she tried to do a trip to prove that it was, that it worked, that you could use these fast chargers. And she found it to be a PR nightmare, as did Buttigieg and a couple other people that have tried to, including Jim Farley, the president of Ford, because when they got to the charging stations, either they didn't work, there was somebody already parked there, or they had to get someone to go ahead of them to park there with another gasoline-powered vehicle to save the spot, which caused a political nightmare for them because someone had a baby on board and they were out of charge. And obviously, that's going to be more important than their political games. So it's really important to note. I also should say that it's important to note that in California, the highest percentage of electric vehicles is only 18% on the road. That's it. So while you're getting the numbers saying, oh, everyone's buying an electric vehicle, that's not true. It's still only about 4% of the marketplace. Globally, it's more in some countries versus others. I work on the World Car of the Year jury. We judge the best cars in the world. In certain countries, it absolutely does not work. India, Jordan, Pakistan, the Middle East, there's no place to charge. So when everyone thinks electric vehicles are the only answer on a global basis, it doesn't even work in Canada unless you live in Toronto. But if you live in the Northern Territories or Nova Scotia, you're out of luck.
Absolutely. What a PR nightmare that sounds, and even like a personal embarrassment as well. So now, yes. Are there any other hidden costs that we should be aware of when it comes to EVs? And are they even offset by the cheaper electricity cost compared to gas these days?
Well, the story is they do cost less, as you said at the top of the show, but the truth is they don't. And here's why. First, the cost of the vehicle on average right now, and the prices are going to go up because of the UAW strike. The average price of an electric vehicle is $66,000. Yes, you can buy them less. Some don't offer the tax credit any longer. They have to be built in the U.S. and the battery material in the U.S. And as 2024, it's going to be a higher percentage, so more vehicles fall off the list. So Tesla will be on the list, and so he's the only winner in this. Besides the average cost currently at $66,000, the gasoline-powered car at $52,000, you've got higher insurance rates. They're much higher because of the replacement costs on that. You've got higher registration fees. States are starting to charge for electric vehicles because you're using the roads, but you're not paying the taxes that you would pay when you pump gas. So they're starting to charge. Even Texas is charging $200 a year, and that could add up pretty quickly. That may be more than you would use in fuel. Also, the electricity can be hard to find, as we talked about. Charging times and costs can be high. I've seen it as low as $14 in California, and I've seen it as high as $100. So at that point, there's this gas or electricity depends on when you charge. There's a lot of factors involved, and nothing in life is free. As you said, it's going to cost you one way or the other. And who's paying for the charging stations that the towns are putting in? You are, in your taxes. So you're paying for it twice. Also, the myth that it's maintenance-free is far from true. The tires wear out quicker, and the reason they do is the vehicles are heavier. And this is also true with hybrid vehicles. Every 10,000 miles, you're going to need new tires and brakes. And although no one wants to talk about it, I'm on the Tire Industry Safety Council, I'm on the Global Brake Symposium, and I will tell you, we are well aware of it. Consumers have no clue that when you start to replace tires, they're no longer $100 a piece. These are low rolling resistant tires designed for the heavier load of these heavier vehicles, and you're going to be dropping close to $1,000 every time you need tires every 10,000 miles. That adds up. And then, of course, the expensive battery replacement you talked about, the prices are as low as $8,000 and go all the way up to $50,000, $60,000, depending on what you're looking at. Again, you're also responsible for the disposal of that, as you are with tires, and you'll be paying that fee. Now, some manufacturers are including 10-year, 100,000-mile battery warranties, which is nice. But if you buy the car used down the road, you still don't know if someone charged it all the time. If it wasn't charged, just like maintenance on any vehicle, there's a lot of factors involved. And people really need to think about, does this make sense? And that's why leasing these electric cars is probably your best choice.
Absolutely. And that was an excellent point about the tires. I totally didn't know that. And I'm like, I drive definitely more than 10,000 miles every single year. So that is good to know. Yeah. And now, remember when everyone said that electric vehicles were the car of the future by 2020 and that everybody will be driving one? Well, now that obviously didn't happen, but there are a lot more EVs on the road these days. Do you eventually think that we'll come to a nice happy mix where there'll be like a certain percentage of EVs and they'll like stabilize and a certain percentage of petrol power cars?
Well, right now we have reached the tipping point, and that tipping point is not what you think it is. Those people that were early adopters who wanted one, they got one, and now you're seeing vehicles sit on the lot. So if we have what's called a rollover, so we know how long a car sits on a lot. So typically about 30 days if a car sits that long, the dealers make money, the manufacturers produce more product, they fill those slots. Here's the problem. We've got vehicles like the Jaguar I-Pace sitting there for 373 days. That's not selling. That's a year on the lot, and they're paying finance charges on that. Chevy Bolt EVs go pretty good because they're at lower cost point, but many of these vehicles, Mercedes, Audi, the Ford Lightning, they're sitting there for 6 months before they're sold. I went to the local dealers in our area. There was a Nissan Leaf that had been sitting there 9 months, and when I showed interest, they thought I was going to buy it. The Toyota BZ4X has been a total disaster. The Volkswagen ID.4, they're just not selling. They're sitting on lots. And consumers are not coming in asking, they're asking for hybrids. Vehicles like the Toyota Prius, that's a really popular car. You're getting almost 60 miles to the gallon. You can get a plug-in hybrid or just a hybrid, and people kind of like not having to plug in.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Lauren Fix, Car Coach.
Thank you.
Well, now, welcome back, Malik. That was super insightful, but let's just continue on the little Musk bashing train just a little longer.
Go for it.
So, as Lauren mentioned, maintenance is a very big expense when it comes to the lifetime of your vehicle. While your average Joe can work on a petrol-powered vehicle because the motor, the basic motor, hasn't changed in centuries. Mm-hmm. But EVs are basically specialized computers and require software and agents to actually work on. And this can quickly add up to $800 to $1,000 a year in maintenance. And unfortunately, if you bought it from Tesla, Musk even has a diversion department so that they actually cancel a lot of these appointments. So there's a wait time to even get your vehicle serviced by these companies.
Elon Musk and the monopoly. Is that what you're referring to here? And Lauren makes a very good point about the cost that actually, because it's not just the initial cost of the vehicle. Typically, when you purchase a petrol vehicle, it is, you know, you may say, okay, well, every now and again, I'll have to get some type of maintenance. I'll have to get, you know, maybe the engine or something flushed or something like that. But the cost is so much more exorbitant when you're talking about EVs. And again, cost will always be an issue for the consumer. It's not always an issue for the actual the manufacturer, but cost will always be an issue for consumers. And as we see, even with, for instance, the Tesla vehicles, they've had now these much lower price models for the Tesla because they realized that their more expensive model that they came out with initially, that people simply cannot afford that. But if you can't afford the basic maintenance on the vehicle, it is not going to encourage you to go out and purchase the vehicle, and you won't believe what maybe manufacturers or I'd say these marketers say that everybody's into, you know, everybody's into this. No, everybody is not into it, and I think there needs to be more testing. There needs to be more done to actually bring the cost down on the maintenance side, because if you have an Elon Musk having a monopoly over it, not whether that's sharing technology or not, you don't even have the maintenance technician. You know, you go to school, you could actually, like a trade school or something, you could focus on, for instance, things like you're being able to operate on cars. cars, whether that's at a Toyota plant or a BMW station or anything like that. But with EV, there is no such thing. And so we have to catch up even on the education front as well.
Absolutely. Excellent points. Thank you so much, Malik, for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So much fun. And despite all of this, EVs are continuing to grow in popularity as social media and heavy marketing continues to shove this green agenda down our throats. Now, I'm all for going green, but I'm also about practicality, and EVs just aren't practical for everyone yet. The current city grid isn't built to handle it. And despite all of this, automakers are all competing to create the flashiest, most high-tech EV with the most futuristic Tron-like body. And we're talking about augmented reality windshields and cars that practically drive themselves. So very cool stuff. But it seems to me that it's all pretty packaging and extra frills meant to distract you. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.